If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Yesterday, we celebrated America's birthday with Independence Day. I hope everyone had a good time. In fact, my family had off-beef hot dogs yesterday, too, just to kind of tag on to RJ's show. Thank you again, RJ, for a great show. You know, my kids love going to something they call safety school. Out at Front Sight, they have child and youth classes. And when in there, they actually tell the kids it's safety school. It's advanced babysitting with a lot of fun stuff. And my kids like going to that. So they've been hounding me. I want to go. Last summer, we didn't go. They always have something going during the July 4th weekend. So last summer, we didn't go. They want to go this time. So sign them up to do that. I signed up to take advanced tactical handgun. Now, keep in mind, I used to be the lead rangemaster out at Front Sight. I wrote virtually all of the curriculum for virtually every course that was out there. I was the only guy on staff qualified to run every single course on the curriculum, on the whole schedule. That was it. I was the only single person who was able to do that. Not liking being the only one able to run a couple of different classes at any one time, I always made it a point to get other qualified people, other people that I saw that were potentially qualified, up to speed to run things. At one point in time, I was the only guy running M16. I was also the only guy running the Uzi submachine gun course. I was also the only guy running Handgun Combat Master Prep. And I saw that as an issue. Now, when it came to like Uzi and M16, there were a couple other guys that could step in and run it as well. However, the way that the schedule was, they were always busy on something else, and that something else, one of the guys could run M16 just fine, but he also ran the rifle courses. So the M16 class always ran concurrently with a rifle course. So how do you have somebody do both? You don't. So I would take it upon myself to find people that were tuned up, knowledgeable, good staff members, and get them up to speed to be able to run these courses as well. Because who knows, if I run into a ditch on the way to work or get hit by a bus on a day off, or I get sick and I'm just not able to go up there and work, how are they able to carry on with the course? So I was always trying to find some of the cream of the crop, different guys, instructors, or people who are already range masters, generally high-end instructors that were ready to move up into some of these niche courses that didn't run all the time. And always trying to get everybody up to speed. One of the things that was my baby for years was advanced tactical handgun. And just constantly going through improvements in that course would, rewrite some of the scenarios, go in there on my days off and design, sit there at home and design new scenarios, go in there, set them up, run through them on my days off, get the timing right, make sure that the scenario runs about the right amount of time so that we can keep people interested in moving. All kinds of stuff, and then rewriting the curriculum, three or four or five different times to constantly improve the course, about once a year, maybe even every 9 months. So probably 8 revisions to the curriculum. Anyhow, having gone back and taken that course last night, I have my review of it coming up in the next segment, which will be kind of interesting from the position I'm at. So stay tuned. You can hear about that as soon as we return from the break.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back from the break. So I end up taking Advanced Tactical Handgun, which the name is a bit deceiving. Many years ago, after Front Sight was founded, they had a lot of people come out and take courses who were honest-to-God bona fide shooters. People who were really, you know, kind of in the game. Really tuned up, minded, tuned up when it came to the gear, tuned up, serious about getting some training done. So they're able to throw some more advanced level tactical scenarios at them and tactical techniques. Now, in fact, there were some tactical techniques involved in the initial 4-day handgun class, which included a technique called palm strike step back, where literally you're almost toe-to-toe with your adversary, put maybe a foot of space if somebody's up in your face, and an attack comes, how to palm strike them up to the nose or up somewhere into the face, and then step back and engage with a couple of shots to the chest, and then step back again as they begin to pile up in front of you is the idea. That was actually in the original 4-day curriculum. They also had responses, because rarely is a bad guy actually going to come up to you from the front. They're usually going to try to outflank you. So there was a response from your support side, and then there was a response from your firing side. Well, all three of those techniques over the years were taken out of the 4-day curriculum. Just a number of things just have fallen by the wayside. And it seems now as though they still scramble to get the techniques that are left done in 4 days. At least that's the way it was when I was there, and I left nearly 2 years ago. So when it comes to advanced tactical handgun, it's really been quite dumbed down. As a matter of fact, from what I am under the impression of from the staff that are still friends of mine that I speak with, is several different things have been dumbed down, but I actually wanted to know myself. I experienced advanced tactical handgun first night last night, which in fact was dumbed down quite a bit. It's more of an introduction to tactics and far from advanced. I mean, there really wasn't anything advanced at all. It was just merely expanding upon the basic techniques that you learn in the basic courses. Very disappointed. It was nice for me to be able to get out there and get tuned up. Okay, that's cool. I can go tune up anywhere. I don't need somebody shouting range commands and letting me know what the exercise is to tune up. It was okay. I guess my actual amount of time behind the trigger, keeping in mind that the class started at, was supposed to start at 6:30. It actually got started about 6:45. And then for some reason or another, just as it was getting dark, they gave us what was a nearly 25-minute break, which turned into more of a 30 to 35-minute break, so they could go set up scenarios, which kind of baffled me, because those things, from having been on the inside, should have been set up before the class started. You should have arrived an hour or so early, or in this case, 40 minutes early, and gotten all of these things set up, if not actually having the range maintenance guys, pardon me, set them up during the daytime, because this was a night course. In the scenarios, they were, all right. I mean, it's okay. The scenarios were okay. One in particular was pretty good. One was really weak. Another was not really that good. And then a final one was all but a waste of time. Just really not impressed. And having been the guy that would sit down and write the curriculum and work out the scenarios, and oftentimes I would get input from some of the other guys that I worked with on this course, some of the higher-end range masters that would work with me on this course, and I would get their input in helping to design or implement things. And the real problem that we had when I ran the course was if there was ever any downtime. You send somebody over to do a scenario, they sit in line, and they wait and wait and wait. Okay, it's their turn. And then they move on to the next scenario that they're assigned to go to, and they sit and they wait and wait and wait. And then they finish up, and they go to another one, and they sit and they wait and they wait and they wait. So what I ended up doing was I ended up putting together what was kind of a round-robin affair, where you send a group, you split the whole class into groups. You get your basic techniques done. Everybody gets warmed up on the range. And then you send them around to groups. And as a group, you actually do different activities that are on a little bit more advanced level. And it might be, okay, run this guy through this, takes 30 seconds, next guy, and then you go through it a few times to get the techniques down. There wasn't much in the way of sitting around. Well, last night was kind of a combination of the two. We moved around in groups, but it was one person would go do something while everybody else sits around. You go through your turn. Once everybody's turn was done, then the group moved. So when it came down to about, I left about 11:45, just before midnight. So in the roughly 5 hours worth of class, I actually had maybe 20 minutes worth of trigger time, 30 minutes worth of trigger time. The rest was hanging out, sitting, waiting around, a little bit of walking, but not much. 5 minutes worth of walking. And all the rest was just sitting around. And to none too advanced technique. So I was not impressed. I don't know if maybe it was because of this being the once a year night course that they dumbed it down or something. I don't know. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt, but needless to say, I was not too impressed. Calling to chime in today on not sure what topic is Jeff on line one from Massachusetts. Jeff, welcome to 2A Radio.
Oh, thanks a lot. Today's my day off from work, so I figured I'd chime in. And I want to talk about martial arts and firearms. Number one, if I was to do a course like that, the downtime, I would improvise it with how to disarm a handgun, you know, using jiu-jitsu style techniques and using other weapons besides a firearm. And also, a course that was beneficial to me, although it wasn't perfect, was impact model mugging, because in Massachusetts, it's very difficult to get a firearms permit. And if you live in the wrong city, you're pretty much screwed.
Now, let me ask you, Jeff, what's it take to get a First Amendment right permit to be able to actually speak your mind? What does it take to get that in Massachusetts?
Oh, First Amendment, I like that one.
Well, what about the Fourth Amendment unreasonable search and seizure permit to keep people from doing that? What does it take to get that in Massachusetts?
Well, that's true.
But you actually have to go through and get a permit for the Second Amendment, right? That and inalienable right. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yes. It's Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, it's like Alice in Wonderland. If you live in the wrong state, you're pretty much screwed. If you live in the wrong city, you're pretty much screwed. And if you do a study of martial arts, for instance, hand-to-hand combat, back in Okinawa, for instance, when the people could not have swords and weapons and stuff like that, they improvised and used farm implements. And you know what? Also, too, if you know how to use a knife can actually be deadlier than a gun, because a knife, you have it right out there, and it's easier to use than a firearm, believe it or not, because you have to be at 23 feet to use a gun, ideally. A lot of your firearm fights are under 23 feet. I remember this. My firearms class.
Hold on. Whoa. You don't want to believe all of those tales. What we're getting back is we're getting back to the Tooler drill, and people have taken what Dennis Tooler developed with actually 21 feet with the Tooler drill.
That's my friend. You're right.
And given all of these different explanations behind what the Tooler drill was, Dennis Tooler explained it quite simply, and that is, if you are surprised and caught off guard by somebody rushing you within 21 feet, it's difficult to get out, get hits, and get out of the way if you just stand there like a boob. So there's a lot of, it was a very narrowly defined exercise. So please don't get into the entire mythology of what everybody has created the Tooler drill into being, which it never was out of purpose. So just remember that.
Okay, you're right. But if you know how to use a stick or know how to use a knife, because you're going to see in other states are going to adopt strict measures just like the Northeast and Massachusetts. Yeah. I mean, we really are ahead of the curve when it comes to communism.
Yeah. Improvised weaponry is really a major deal. Improvised weapons, you need to know what to be able to pick up and use that's at hand or carry something other than a gun. I completely agree with you. I've gone through a lot of that training myself. And you're right, there's a lot of courses out there that teach that and integrate that with guns, those sorts of courses are available all over the place, and it's good stuff. And, Jeff, we're about to head into the break, so I thank you in advance for calling out, man.
You're really welcome. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, have a good day off. All right, guys, we are headed into the break. We've got more information coming at you. A cop out of Cornville, Tennessee, you're going to want to hear this story. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're listening live right here on 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Welcome back, guys. I don't know what happened to the intro bumper there, but it certainly fed it off. I just wanted to hit something else. Yesterday, being Sunday, is generally the day that the new episode of Top Shot comes out. Of course, I was on Top Shot. And since it was a holiday, they ended up having a whole series of all the Top Shots. There's four episodes that have come out. So they played them back to back, 8 hours worth of Top Shots. Here, you know, episode 1 through 4 and then episode 1 through 4 again. And in episode 3, I was featured because there was, there was some static between one of the other guys that was on my team, Kelly, and I. And it was also the last episode that I was on the show. And the way History Channel actually portrayed the issue between Kelly and I was, very well done through creative editing, and it was really pretty far away from the actual reality of what was going on. There was some tension in the house over it, but it was not to the level that Top Shot had that History Channel had the thing edited. One case in point was, at the very end of the show, it's time for me to shake everybody on my team's hand and say goodbye and leave. And Kelly was the first person I would have gone to. He was the first person in line for me to shake hands and say goodbye. Well, they edited that out, and they showed me dissing Kelly and going on to somebody else and saying goodbye. So I never even said a word, never shook Kelly's hand, which is totally not what happened. I went up there, I shook his hand, he handed me a note, we shared some words, I went on to the next guy, and that's just one example of it's not being a reality TV. It's alternate reality, whatever seems in their mind to sell the best, which, you know, okay, that's their deal. I signed, you guys can do whatever the hell you want. And they did. So, of course, whenever that episode plays, I get a myriad of emails. And yesterday was no exception. I get this. And this is just an example. Just an example, and all of them come down this way. This one's actually shorter than most. It says, Bill, forgive me. I must be missing something, but I gotta say that your vitriol against Kelly on the Top Shot show is entirely out of sync with anything he may have done to you. Sincerely, Jay Acker. Okay, so we had all these people that just love Kelly, and they think that since I was pissed at Kelly, that something must be wrong with me. So my response to Jay, which is very typical response to the people that are sending me emails, I should say typical to the response of the people who actually have the intestinal fortitude to send me a standard email. Some of them go to the 2A Radio site and fill in the form to where I will get an email. And then where they need to put in their email address, they put like nobody@noone.com, no phone number in there, like 555-555-1212 or some garbage like that. And they won't even sign their name. And, of course, it'll be expletive laden, somebody that sits there and probably just daydreams about being with Kelly. I don't know. So, anyway, here's a typical response. Jay, you and the rest of America saw a craftily edited episode 3 that was far away from any resemblance of the reality of what we experienced. Kelly insulted the mother of my children in a way that would have had most people in the dentist chair. After a few hours, we were over it. History made it look like it dragged on for days and days. Kelly was a guest on my radio show on Thursday, June 24th. It's worth a listen on the archives page at www.2aradio.com, Bill. So, that was a shorter email that came to me with a shorter than standard response, because quite honestly, I'm getting sick and tired of having to handle it. Probably about 70 to 80% of the email I get dealing with that show are people thinking that I overreacted to Kelly because of the way the whole thing was edited. And I went on an expletive, filled rant, talking with a couple other guys dealing with Kelly. And you gotta keep in mind, that was about 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes after Kelly made a comment that was just completely out of line. Kelly even admitted it when he was on the show. It was out of line. Totally out of line. So, anyhow, they made it look like it was this thing that just kept dragging on, dragging on, dragging on. The thing, it was over a, see, it happened one day, I was gone the next, and we pretty much handled it, had it handled the next day. So it was just that afternoon into the evening. Big deal. So, anyhow, I just, one of the things I have to deal with being on that show, you know, the first week everybody was like, you know, why can't Mike Sieglander shoot? Guys, the rear sight was bouncing all over the place. Mike didn't realize until several rounds were downrange. You can't blame Mike. We ended up having a crappy piece of gear. Then the next year, the next episode, it looked like Brad was just this absolute complaining whiner. And of course they played that up. That was the drama for that episode. And yeah, I mean, Brad complains and he whines. But the thing is it's not like he's whining because it's woe is me. That's just kind of the way Brad communicates. He's a good dude. I like Brad quite a bit. We've communicated since the show. Then on episode 3, they make me look like a complete a-hole because I didn't like something that Kelly said. Nobody really understands anything about it. Of course, they really played that up. I was so interested in episode 4 coming so the heat would come off of me because they replay the show every day throughout the week. So, anyhow, as it turns out, episode 4 didn't have any one bad guy, so I'm waiting for episode 5 to come up. There's supposed to be a lot of blue team drama. Let's hope that, you know, that goes away, goes. Anyhow, just to let you know, that's the garbage I've been dealing with, but, you know, it was still a good experience. I'd still do it again. So, again, when we come back from this break, we're going to get into a former policeman from Cornville, Tennessee, who's suing the city. I was not excited when I read the headlines of this, but when I got into the story, I liked it. So I'm going to share that with you as soon as we come back from the break. You're listening to me, Bill Carnes, your host, right here on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. So out of Cornsville, Tennessee, a suit seeking compensatory damages of $500,000, as well as punitive damages and costs, has been filed against Cornville by a former employee. Now, I read this and I'm thinking, oh, great, it's somebody with a grudge. So, Jason D. Lee, his attorney, Clay Parker, of Shelbyville, Tennessee, filed the suit last week, which it actually be week before last. In addition to the city and its police department, the suit names Mayor Amos Davis, town administrator Taylor Brandon, and police chief Todd Bone, and their official roles as individuals. As of Friday afternoon, this was a week ago Friday, Brandon had no comment on the suit because he had yet seen a copy. Now, Lee lives in Cornsville and claims he was denied gainful employment, free speech, and due process. The source of the friction between Lee and the town appears to have been speeding tickets and Cornville's reputation as an alleged speed trap. According to the complaint in Marshall County Circuit Court, here's the following. Lee was a Cornsville policeman from September 2008 through June 2009, so 10 months. He has been unable to find another job in law enforcement since Cornsville fired him, and he's been told that, quote, officials of Cornsville have given him bad recommendations up to and including, but not limited to, statements that he was terminated for falsifying documents and reports and sleeping on the job, end quote. So I look at that and I'm thinking, who is this jackass to actually file a suit? Well, so we read on. Chief Todd Bone told the plaintiff that he must write at least 5 tickets each shift. You get that? The police chief told the cop, you must write at least 5 tickets each shift. Okay. Lee alleges he was told the city, quote, gets more money from speeding tickets than from enforcing criminal law. Well, of course you do. And claims he was counseled several times, quote, to stop making so many arrests and write more tickets. Can you believe this? He was told to stop arresting criminals. Suspects, I guess I should say, and write more tickets. The plaintiff expressed at various times to management and other individuals that he believed a quota system for tickets in deference to enforcing criminal laws was unlawful and refused to turn his back on enforcing laws as his sworn duty. Well, now things are looking pretty interesting. Lee was suspended from his job in mid-June 2009 without being given a reason. A meeting of the city council voted unanimously to let him come back to work, quote, on probation. Plaintiff has informed, based on conversations with 2 city council members, that the above defendants, Davis, Brandon, and Bone, wanted the plaintiff terminated. So that was the mayor, the city manager, and the police chief wanted the plaintiff terminated. Now, Davis called Lee after the city council meeting and told him, quote, to come into work, and if he saw anyone, including other officers, committing criminal offenses, he was to turn his head and look the other way and not come forward with it. He also told the plaintiff that if he told anyone about the conversation the two had, he would, quote, fire him himself. Okay? In any event, Lee alleges he was fired when he reported to City Hall the next day. The suit claims that Davis said his termination, quote, was based in part on his attitude on the phone the night before, while Lee asserted the conversation was very amiable. So, of course, 2 different sides of this story. So it looks as though he wasn't making enough money for the city. Now, the only department, the only, I guess, division of any police department that actually generates funds is that division which writes a whole bunch of tickets. Now, in any major city, you usually see the cops riding around on motorcycles. They're traffic cops. Now, on TV and in the movies, they portray traffic cops as a basic lowly cop. Generally speaking, that's not true. Patrol officer is usually where you start off. If you want to go just write tickets and do tickets and accidents, that is, you test for that and you actually have to ask and test and get into that line of work. Can you believe that? You actually have to request to ride around on your motor scooter and write tickets. It's a request. How about that? Isn't that wonderful? It's like special duty almost. Like you would want to get onto SWAT or you'd want to get into a detective bureau. You'd want to be part of the homicide division or you'd want to be part of the larceny division. You want to ride around on your motor scooter and write tickets and fill out forms on accidents. I don't get that. Nevada Highway Patrol is essentially that, tickets and accidents. It's they're essentially what's referred to as misdemeanor cops in a felony world. Here in Nye County, Nevada, where I live, we have a sheriff, Tony DeMeo. And Tony has served two terms. He comes from Jersey City, New Jersey. He retired from there, came out here, became a deputy, ran for sheriff against the former sheriff, Wade Ledsky, who, in my opinion, was a real scumbag. And Tony beat him, which was really interesting because, I mean, you look at the, at least the reputation of the former sheriff, the guy who was sitting at the time, and he could have had just about any election rigged. But there was a lot of people watching this one. He lost. He ran for re-election 4 years ago, DeMeo did, and won, against the former sheriff who was trying to get back in. Ledsky was trying to get back in. Did not work. DeMeo's running for his third term now, which to me, anybody that serves 8 years in any one office has served enough. It's time for them to go. I don't really care who's running against them for the most part. If they served 8 years, they served enough. Go do something else. Well, DeMeo's running again, and the primary election came and went. The one guy that a lot of people were hoping for, guy that was a former U.S. Navy SEAL, he'd done a lot of stuff, good background. He did not make it. But the guy that did make it into the general election, whose name I forget right now, he's either a current or former Nevada Highway Patrol officer. And keep in mind, in the primary, the sitting sheriff, DeMeo, is running for re-election, beat the other six or seven people that were running against him. He ended up with 70% of the popular vote. 30% of the vote went to the other six or seven people. So anyhow, the guy that is left in it is either a former or current NHP officer, Nevada Highway Patrol, which, I mean, I'm all for getting somebody else into the office. But somebody that was NHP, I mean, honestly, what sort of experience do you have writing tickets and doing accidents? I mean, would he potentially turn the sheriff's department into a ticket writing organization? God, I hope not. That's not police work, guys. Anybody out there who's a cop and you write tickets as your main living, that's really sad. Guys, that's really, really sad. You might be going through the mantra that everybody else is, well, you know, it helps save lives. You end up writing somebody a ticket and they'll slow down and they won't be so aggressive in the future. Right. And I'm sure all you cops who've written tickets at one point in time have gotten a ticket or two, and has that changed your driving habits for more than a few days or a week? The answer to that is no. It's just no. So to sit out there and do revenue generation by writing tickets is a really sorry excuse for being a cop. Really, really sorry. I've even when I was a cop, I had even less respect for the guys that were out there writing tickets all day long than before I got on, and I didn't have much respect for them then. When I got onto the police department, I found out what the job was all about. Really, sitting around on your motor scooter, running radar, and writing tickets is an easy way of getting through the day. Really easy way of getting through. Not much going on. So that's just a sorry, sorry excuse for being a cop. Going out there, doing some police work, stopping some bad guys, that's police work. Okay? That's actually making arrests of suspects who are suspected in doing a crime. If you didn't witness it, you've got good information about it. That's police work. Okay? Going out there and harassing the normal everyday citizens that are out there trying to be productive and do things on their way from point A to point B and writing them a ticket to generate funds, that is not police work. You could have a monkey, actually, you could have a computer do that. In a lot of states, they do. In California, they do. They've got all these cameras that will, you know, see how fast you're going or whether or not you went through the light just a little tiny bit too late or whatever. It'll take pictures and send you tickets. You don't need a human being to do that. So a human being that makes that decision is just pretty low. Actually, the bottom of the law enforcement totem pole, in my opinion. And I've done the work. I've done the job. All right. We're going to move on from that a little bit. Moving on. I got to tell you, this whole thing with Obama and this whole thing with Mexico keep coming back. Everybody and their is just absolutely all over Obama, and they're also all over this whole thing with Mexico. Their stories galore. This new thing with Chicago is also taking a lot of press, so we're actually going to hit that. This is about the new strict gun control rules for Chicago. Now, keep in mind, they just got their butts handed to them last Monday in the McDonald v. Chicago case. So here it is, out of Chicago. With the city's gun ban certain to be overturned, Mayor Richard Daley on Thursday introduced what city officials say is the strictest handgun ordinance in the United States. Okay, great. So let's see how they're going to violate. Well, what the Supreme Court did was they essentially made a ruling on how the Second Amendment applies, and that it needs to be interpreted based on how it applies, and they sent it back down to the lower court. So, the measure, which draws from ordinances around the country, will ban gun shops in Chicago and prohibit gun owners from stepping outside their homes, even onto their porches or garages, with a handgun. Now, a lot of people clean their guns in the garage, but you're not going to be allowed to do that in Chicago. How they even think that they could, if you're on your own property, how they think they could actually tell you that you can and cannot exercise a right in different areas of your own property is ridiculous to me. That's like saying you're allowed to talk politics inside your home, but you can't do it in the garage and you can't do it in your yard. Right. Okay, so Daley announced his ordinance at a park on the city's south side. Of course, that's a lousier part of town where they say a lot of people are getting killed by gun violence because they're not doing their job there. 3 days after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Americans have a right to own a gun for self-defense anywhere they live. And the city council was expected to vote this last Friday, and they did, and it was unanimous, like 45-0. How can you run a city with 45 people on the council? Shouldn't it be like maybe a dozen, 12, 13, 14 max? I mean, city council, I think in Las Vegas, has like 7 members, and there's 2 million people there. Now, as long as I'm mayor, we will never give up or give in to gun violence. That continues to threaten every part of our nation, including Chicago, said Daley, who was flanked by activists, city officials, and the parents of a teenager who was shot and killed on a city bus while shielding a friend. The ordinance, which Daley urged the city council to pass, also would do the following. Limit the number of handgun residents can register to one per month and prohibit residents from having more than one handgun in operating order at any given time. So let's say you own 10 handguns. You have to have 9 of them taken apart. Only one can be operable at any one time. How could you possibly consider that to be not a violation? Again, require residents in homes with children to keep them in locked boxes or equipped with trigger locks. Okay. So if you have kids, you cannot defend them because the gun has to be made unusable. You can't defend your children, is what that law is all about. Let's see another one. Require prospective gun owners to take a 4-hour class and 1-hour training at a gun range. They would have to leave the city for training because Chicago prohibits new gun ranges and limits the use of existing ranges to only police officers. Those restrictions were similar to those in an ordinance passed in Washington, D.C. after the High Court struck down its ban in the Heller case 2 years ago. More provisions. Prohibit people from owning a gun if they are convicted of a violent crime, domestic violence, or 2 or more convictions of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Okay, that I can actually understand. Residents convicted of a gun offense would have to register with the police department. All right, good. If you can get convicted of an offense with a gun. Now, that's good if it's a reasonable deal. If it's, hey, I was cleaning my gun in the garage and they arrested me for it because the garage was up and a neighbor saw, not good. See, calls for the police department to maintain a registry of every handgun owner in the city with the names and addresses to be made available to police officers, firefighters, and other emergency responders. Lovely. So that's what they're looking at. Anyhow, guys, there's more to come after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Hi guys, welcome back. Continuing on with this new City Chicago ordinance, which is sure to be challenged in court. It says those who already have handguns in the city, which have been illegally in the city since the city's ban was approved 28 years ago, 1982, would have 90 days to register those weapons according to the proposed ordinance. So there'd be a 90-day amnesty. But the ordinance also says you can only register one gun a month, so that means, what, if you went there on the very first day, you might get as many as four guns registered? Maybe, if you had that many or more? Who knows? Residents convicted of violating the city ordinance can face a fine up to $5,000 and be locked up for as long as 90 days for a first offense, and a fine of up to $10,000 and as long as 6 months behind bars for subsequent convictions. However, you're not allowed to have a gun if you're convicted of a gun crime, so how could you have a second offense? I don't know. He says, according to Council Mara Georges, we've gone farther than anyone else ever has, says Corporation Council Mara Georges. Okay, great. Still, the mayor, whose office is trying to craft an ordinance that will withstand legal challenges, had to back off some provisions he'd hoped to include, including requiring gun owners to insure their weapons and restricting each resident to one handgun. Georgia said it would have been expensive for homeowners to include guns on their homeowners and renters insurance policies, so such a requirement would have been seen as discriminatory in the city's poorer residents. Limiting the number of handguns could be seen as discriminatory to people who owned weapons before the city's ban that went into effect in 1982 or before they moved to the city. We can limit the place in which those handguns can be located, she said, before adding a not-so-veiled swipe at the court. For instance, the Supreme Court does not want them coming into the courthouse. Doesn't mean you can't take them into the garage. Still, Daly indicated that no matter what was included in the ordinance, he expects legal challenges. Everybody has a right to sue, he says. That's right, because you don't follow the ordinance. So, with that being said, I'm the guy putting on America's Victory Shoot. You're hearing the commercials right here on RBN. Go to victoryshoot.org and check it out, or go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the link. One of the things we're going to be offering for the residents of Chicago is the 4 hours training plus 1 hour on the range is all going to be incorporated throughout the entire 2 days. So I don't know if the city could possibly come and say, look, you are not going to be allowed to actually teach this stuff without us authorizing you to do it, because they just said that you can't do all the training in the city. But anyhow, we're going to find out what it's going to be, what this 4 hours it needs to be included in, and we're going to incorporate that into the curriculum. We may have to have some people off to the side, but going to America's Victory Shoot will get you those provisions and the ability to use the gun properly.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government
We will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.